This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
8 strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
Welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you. Thanks for being here again, and hopefully you enjoyed your 4th of July holiday, Independence Day. And Mariners didn't enjoy it as much as they enjoyed their weekend, taking 4 from Baltimore. And what was really tough in terms of scheduling, the Mariners flying out Sunday night and then turning around after a long flight to Houston and playing a day game in Houston, taking on the red-hot Houston Astros. And it was an interesting ball game. Unfortunately, I don't have the highlights for this one, so I'm just going to have to talk through it here real quick. But the Mariners facing Lance McCullers, who was outstanding. He struck out double digits in the ball game. Mariners couldn't get much going, although they did have a fantastic opportunity in the seventh inning. Bases loaded, nobody down, and they couldn't push a run across. McCullers for the game goes 7, gives up 5 hits, just 1 run, walked 1, and fanned 10 in the ballgame. The bullpen for Houston, which has been excellent, 2 clean innings without a run, although Nelson Cruz, last batter of the ballgame, nearly got one out to right field, back against the wall, brushed up against the wall to make the catch, but Nelson Cruz nearly tied it, the last batter of the ballgame. Mariners also a runner thrown at home in the first inning. So some opportunities for the M's in 2 innings in particular, but for the most part, not able to get much going. On the flip side, what looked like was going to be a long day for Miley ended up being a pretty good start. He had a lot of hard hit balls early in the ballgame, but bounced back to go 6 2/3, gives up just a couple of runs and fan 2. I think that's a great sign moving forward. Tom Wilhelmsen, 1 inning, gives up 1 hit, no runs. So the Mariners drop game 1 of this 3-game series. We now look to bounce back and try and even the series today.
We did. I thought we had him on the ropes there on the 7th inning with the bases loaded, nobody out. But, unfortunately, didn't get it done. But, McCullers had really good stuff. You gotta give him credit. He had good stuff, good breaking ball today. Probably one of the better breaking balls we've seen all year. So, tough game. I thought Miley pitched really well. After a rocky first there, he got him going again. It looked kind of like the Wade Miley we saw back in May, which is definitely a positive sign. We certainly need that out of him.
The first inning there, you got a chance that got third, and that got away from you too.
Yeah, leadoff triple. Thought we'd pick up that run. It didn't happen. We got a little bit too aggressive. On the ball in the dirt there and the third strike call. But, it happens. It's unfortunate we got our 4-hole hitter coming up. But, it was a tough game, tight game. I thought we were going to end it right there. The whole way, like I said, the 7th inning was really our shot.
Is that a bad gamble in the first?
I remember
it turned out bad. Stuff like gets played all the time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think, talking to him about it, if he'd have taken off the minute the catcher grabbed the ball and spin, he didn't. He waited until the ball was kind of out of the catcher's hand, and then he went. So, would have made a difference. Very well could have. It is an aggressive play. Again, 4-hole hitter coming up. It's a little tough to handle that one. But, it does happen, unfortunately. But, some good signs today with our pitching and good to see Miley out there.
What did Wade do to kind of get things back on track?
He started locating better. Got the ball down in some spots. I thought his off-speed pitches were better today. Decent changeups. And, you know, the home run he gave up to Springer, I think it was supposed to be a ball away that came back over the plate. But for me, I thought the ball was coming out of his hand good, and it was much, much crisper today.
This should be an interesting matchup as well, as Dallas Keuchel is going to go for the Houston Astros. It's been a struggle for Keuchel this year, although he's pitched a little bit better as of late. Keuchel for the season, 5-9, a 5.13 ERA. Taijuan Walker was excellent as last time, 4-6, a 3.29 ERA on the season. So the middle game of a three-game series. Walker has already faced Houston twice this season, including one of his best starts. Seven innings of one-run ball, fanned 11 on April 25th. The Mariners won that one 3-2. And he pitched well last time at 6 1/3 one-run ball against Baltimore last Thursday. Keuchel, meanwhile, in 10 starts, has fanned 68 and 70 innings this year. 5.13 ERA overall, a surprise given his last season, but he's won his past two starts, 2-0, a 3.26 ERA against the Royals and the Angels. So the Mariners will try and even things up again. Mariners and Astros, game two of this series. Now, we have a ton to get to in this podcast. One thing we're going to do, bullpen banter. Didn't do it yesterday, so we'll have it today. Charlie Furbush, Tom Wilhelmsen. So let's go to that right now.
I want to hide my excitement, but I can't. We're back again with another edition of Bullpen Banter. I'm Charlie Furbush, and Tom Wilhelmsen is my guest. My buddy, old pal. How are you, man?
Oh, I'm so good, Charles. How are you, bud?
Oh, just about to give you the greatest interview of your life, you know, so I hope you're prepared for that.
I believe it. I've been looking forward to this for a long, long time, Charles.
Yes. You're only one of the few people that do call me Charles. You and Adam Lind. How about that? You know that?
Yeah, Adam Lind's a tremendous human being, too.
I thought you almost called him a Tyrannosaurus.
Tyrannosaurus. He's a Tyrannosaurus human being.
Speaking of small arms.
Yes.
Kind of. Speaking of dinosaurs, what is your favorite dinosaur?
Boy, there's so many to choose from, really. But I guess growing up, I was a fan of Triceratops.
Okay.
And the pterodactyl.
Okay.
Probably because they both started with T's, and my first name starts with a T.
Yeah. Tom is. His real name is Thomas Mark Wilhelmsen. I only know that because I'm smart.
Charles Roderick Furbush.
Yeah. That's it. Right. Oh, yeah. That's our names. Those are our names. All right. Since your time in Texas was short-lived, can you give me like a Texas meal that you had that was local to Texas?
Yeah. So they have this thing over there called Tex-Mex, and you know, from Arizona, I eat Mexican food quite often.
The authentic kind.
The authentic kind. Now Tex-Mex is a little different. Instead of salsa, what you get is marinara sauce.
Whoa.
And you also...
So it's like pizza.
So it's like marinara sauce.
Okay.
I mean, and then instead of like, you don't get veggies on your fajitas. That's just kind of weird to me. I felt Tex-Mex was extraordinarily bland.
Yeah. Sounds like it's bland and unhealthy. They didn't even add your vegetables, man.
that's a fact.
Right?
Yes.
What's Mexican food without salsa?
And what's Mexican food without veggies? I mean, that's pretty much part of the diet right there.
Yeah. Wow, I don't think I'm going to get Tex-Mex ever. Did you happen to pick up a pair of your favorite style of shoes, cowboy boots?
You know, I took a gander. I did, I'm not going to lie. But I walked in with my Birkenstocks on, and I didn't have any socks. So I really couldn't try any of these boots on.
Do they have, like, Birken boots? Like...
Yes, they do.
Actually,
when I was traded, my mother sent me a picture of some Birken boots.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
It's like the open foot, and then up around your ankle to mid-calf is like a rattlesnake boot part.
Kind of sounds like it would be like in Greece or something, like that style shoe.
This
you know?
Is Sparta, but in Germany. So this is ancient Germany.
Here goes Birken socks, everyone knows.
Oh. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. Let me ask you what you would be doing if you weren't playing baseball.
I would love to travel. I would just love to travel. And,
wouldn't that be great to have a job that paid you to travel?
Yeah, you know, this one kind of does. Like, it kind of does pay you to travel. But, like, the traveling we do, like, we get to go to these great towns. And granted, of course, we get to do a little bit of sightseeing and go into these awesome ballparks. But it really doesn't give us much time to really go out and, you know, hike around or adventure and see some of the
I think some of the sights. I got an idea. It just popped in my head right now. After we're done playing, eons from now, we should probably hire or get in contact with the Travel Channel, and we could do the Tom and Charlie Traveling America Show. Maybe we could work on the name, but...
Yeah, we could totally do that. We I agree with you, man. That'd be fun.
If they could pay us to do it, you know, and we could do a TV show.
I'd watch that.
Yeah, right?
Who wouldn't watch that?
All right, we got a what's your superpower of choice?
Boy, there's just so many, but I guess if I was to choose one, I would love to fly, get a bird's eye view, especially of things like a pterodactyl eye view.
Eye view actually it flows. That's
cool. It'd be really cool to like see the Grand Canyon or dip dive and you know some of these slot canyons and stuff.
All right, that would be great. And we're gonna wrap it up with your favorite karaoke song. What are you gonna do? We're gonna duo something, you know.
Well, we've duoed I think once or twice before, and I'll just go back to it because it's so much fun. But I like to do karaoke with a group of people, and there's really no other song that's better with a group of people than Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. See, I don't know where to begin with this song because it's so great. I think I know all the words, but I don't want to start.
Boom! 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 Boom. Mama just killed a man.
I can't believe mom did that.
Gun against his head. Pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life has just begun. Now you gotta throw me away. Goom, goom, mama. Sometimes I wish I'd never been born at all. Carry on, carry on.
That's a rat.
Oh. Really matters.
Oh, that was beautiful. Oh, that's so great. All right. We got to get going, guys. Another week of Band Banter.
Very interesting conversation on home runs. A lot happened last month in terms of home runs on an individual and team basis and major league wide. Here to talk about that, Aaron Goldsmith and Mike Blowers.
We're going to talk about one of your favorite subjects, Mike. We're going to talk the home run ball.
Love it.
Yeah, I see. I knew that would be the case.
Yeah.
All right. So this has been maybe quietly, which would be a surprise to say, but maybe quietly, this has been a pretty historic first half of the season when it comes to home runs, not only in overall quantity, but also in individual efforts. So let's kind of run down some of these. First of all, we'll start with the team that the Mariners are playing right now. How about the Baltimore Orioles, Mike, setting a June 56 home runs in the month of June for the Baltimore Orioles, passing Mark McGwire's 1996 Oakland A's. Scott Brosius, by the way, who's the hitting coach for the Rainiers, was on that team as well. But can you put that in perspective, Mike? 56 dingers in 1 month? That's incredible.
It really is. And I think that it's amazing in this game sometimes if you can get a couple of guys that maybe you're on the fence about and all of a sudden they take off. Mark Trumbo, for example, 23 home runs on the year. Then your stars start to catch up to it. Chris Davis, quietly, 20 home runs, you know, on the year. Adam Jones, who – started the year struggling as their leadoff hitter. Oh, he has 16 home runs. You know, it kind of works that way. So, but that's a lot of home runs. They have a hitter-friendly ballpark that they're playing in, and they have a lot of guys that can slug it. Machado.
For sure.
Yeah.
David Ortiz, just the other night, Mike, hit home run number 522 in his career. He's now 19th all-time in home runs in Major League history. He passed with that one swing. He passed Ted Williams, Willie McCovey, and Frank Thomas on the all-time home run list. I mean, David Ortiz is slugging his way to the Hall of Fame when his time comes, and this gets us back to it seems like, unfortunately, the endless conversation about Edgar Martinez and the DH and getting to the Hall of Fame. But I really think that David Ortiz is kind of helping to open up people's eyes, and Frank Thomas before him, for DHs in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I think that one of the advantages that Frank had is he played a lot of first base in his career.
Right.
I think Ortiz is probably the guy, the model, to get him in there. I don't think that there's any doubt that he's a Hall of Famer and will go in, and that certainly will open up the door, so you'll have to consider it. I think it's kind of like when you look at closers in the game, and they refuse to put those guys in for a long time, and that's changing now. But you have to get somebody in there first that is strictly a DH, and that's what Ortiz has been his whole career.
And Ortiz benefits from playing for an iconic franchise in the hub of a media market, and also some postseason performances that have gone down in history. I
mean, yeah, he's one of the best I've ever seen. Postseason, dramatic walk-off, home runs. I mean, not just base hits, but homers. He's amazing. It's been an amazing career to watch him. And you know, you really get to appreciate him. I know that I do. And just watching him interact with his teammates, the way he has handled himself, the way he is as far as the game goes, he's – you know, he's really special, and I can't believe that he's going to retire after the year he's putting together. I mean, it's a monster year he's having. And if you consider the young talent around him, the guys and the opportunities for him, they're not going away. They're going to be there for a long time. So,
Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yeah.
I'll be excited to see
Bogarts.
Absolutely. Bogarts is going to start the All-Star game, it looks like. Thank you. I'll be interested to see the type of reception that he gets here and what kind of fanfare the Mariners put on for him when the Red Sox come to town near the end of the season.
It'll be the best. The Mariners organization, they're great at this kind of stuff. And when he shows up, I'm sure that they'll put something together that will be one of the better ones that you're going to see all year.
And it'll be off the charts. Well, when you talk about home runs, Mike, in the season, the Mariners are right at the top of the list. Of course, five more home runs last night. But these numbers are amazing, Mike. You think about the Mariners this year now, 122 home runs. That's more than the year-end total, all right, the final total of home runs at the end of the season in seven seasons in Mariners franchise history, including most recently 2010 and 2011. So the home run numbers have been incredible for the Mariners. They have eight games left before the All-Star break, including today, and seven of those will be on the road in ballparks where it's going to be awfully warm, Houston and also Kansas City. Mike, think about this. The Mariners just need 12 more home runs to pass 12 more teams for their year-end home run total in franchise history. They will already be kind of right in the middle of the pack in year-end home runs in franchise history at the All-Star break if they can do that, 12 home runs in the next eight games, which I think is very possible.
Last night I was listening to the post-game show that Gary was doing and does a great job with, and he said something that I didn't realize, and they have an opportunity, but they could have eight guys go into the All-Star break with double-digit homers. And if I heard Gary right, I believe that has never happened with the Mariners.
They've never even had seven, and they've got two guys.
At nine right now.
At nine, and Smith and Goody.
Yeah, with already six guys that have done it.
In fact, if you look at Major League history, only three times in Major League history has a team gone into the break with eight hitters in double-digit home runs, and a great chance that happens for the Mariners this year.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, what about Zunino? They play him the rest of the way. He could be there. He's got two game.
You're right. Eight more to go, baby.
It's amazing. You know, up and down the lineup, and you think about it, and I think that you have to get, again, contribution from guys that you don't expect. I think at the end of the year, you expect Cano, or at the start of the year, you expected Cano to be 20-plus home runs. Mm-hmm. You expected Nelson Cruz to be 30. You expected Kyle Seager to be in the 20s somewhere because that's what they have done. But all of a sudden, Martin, a career high, and we're not to the All-Star break yet with 11 is your leadoff hitter.
And that career high came weeks ago.
Oh, came weeks ago, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. And you talk about Gutierrez again coming off the bench, part-time player. Seth Smith plays quite a bit, but still. You know, Deho Lee and what he has done. Adam Lynn, for me, hasn't even gotten hot yet. Right. He has 12. And you know, that projects out. We're at the midway point, so 24. I think he's got a chance to hit 30.
So if you look at every single month ever played in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
June of 2016, the month we're just coming off of, had the fifth most home runs hit in it in Major League history. I mean, there's over 1,000 home runs combined hit last month in Major League Baseball. And, you know, Mike, the narrative that we've talked about, especially here on Sundays, for the last few years has been this is a game right now that it's dominated by pitching. Hitters are having a hard time catching up to it. And at least so far this season, and this isn't to say that strikeouts are going down anytime soon because they're still on the rise, but there's been something about this year, Mike, and I don't know if we can even pinpoint what it is, but, boy, the home run ball has been in play in a major way.
Yeah, I've thought about it, especially over the last couple of weeks and watching the games and seeing what's going on. I still think that the pitching is dominant. I think that you look at the strikeout numbers and that'll tell you that, but I think the hitter's attitude about things is a little bit different. And I think that they're not concerned about the strikeout, and I think they're cutting it loose. And I think you're seeing more and more managers not willing to give up outs. They're letting their guys hit. Scott Servais is letting guys swing 3-0 all the time, and it's paying off for them. And then I think on the flip side, and it kind of coincides with the Mariners and their philosophy, and I think that it's working its way around baseball, is the pressure on the pitchers to command the strike zone. They don't want to walk anybody. So you're seeing more and more pitches in the middle of the plate when they're behind, and these hitters are taking advantage of it.
Are they not wanting to walk guys because of you don't want to put one or two on for the home run?
I think that, yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think that there's so much going on in baseball right now, and there's so much data that they're just trying to stay away from the walks completely.
When you look at the home run, though, and you look at recent World Series champions, I mean, you think about the Giants. Now, granted, they play in a horrible run park. I mean, right. Arguably the worst in baseball. Yeah. One of their recent World Series championships, they were last in the majors in home runs. Kansas City last year, obviously not a home run hitting team, not a home run ballpark. But so to me, I guess it's kind of funny when you think about constructing a team in today's day and age. And we've seen Jerry Dipoto obviously lean more towards on-base guys, and yet we're still seeing all the home runs and multi-run homers because of the on-base percentage, which has been so much better this year for the Mariners. But just kind of strikes me as odd, Mike, because there's a proven formula that you do not need to hit the long ball to win a World Series. But I suppose, to be perfectly honest, Mike, and your perspective as a former major leaguer would be a good one here. In today's day and age, man, if you can hit 20 homers in a season, you get a good contract doing that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely you do.
And 20 is just the start.
Yeah, absolutely you do, and you know, for me, though, I like if you look at it and you think about on-base percentage and what those guys mean, and it's obviously it's translated for the Mariners, but you bring up San Francisco, you bring up Kansas City, they probably have more speed than power. Mm-hmm. But those guys getting on base create so much pressure on the guy out there holding the ball in the middle of the diamond. And the tendency is that they're going to make more mistakes because of that pressure. And I think hitters take advantage of that. I used to say it all the time, and it's something I've talked to Edgar Martinez about, because as you know, this club going into this year had really struggled hitting with men in scoring position. And I talked to Edgar about that, and it was one of the first things that he addressed when he took over as the hitting coach here, and that is how to relax in those situations and understand it's the pitcher that's in trouble, not the hitter, and take that pressure off of yourself. And understand that if you don't get it done, the guy right behind you has an opportunity to do it. Well, the only way that works is to keep creating those opportunities. And that's what we've seen from the Mariners, and I think you're seeing it throughout baseball.
You know, we heard Felix talk about that from the reverse aspect of it, because Felix's numbers over the first 2 months of the season before he went on the disabled list, pitching with runners in scoring position, he had held opponents to something like 1-for-44 or 2-for-43.
Yeah.
It was just insane. And he said that he is able to relax even more so when he has a runner at second base than he does when he has a runner at first or the base is empty. And it's easy to feel that way when you're a right-hander of a generation like Felix. Yeah. But it goes to show you that if you can just calm yourself down, whether you're the pitcher or the hitter, good things can happen, and more times than not will.
And that being said, we saw something this year that is extremely rare with Felix on the mound, and that is he walked in a run.
You're right.
And the reason why those numbers were so much in his favor as far as getting hitters out. Maybe you and I could do this sometime, Aaron. I think you would enjoy it. But watch how many of those outs that he was able to record or the strikeouts that he was able to pick up on pitches out of the strike zone.
Yeah, you're right.
Get guys to chase. Now, Felix can do that because everything he throws is a plus pitch, and especially that changeup that he throws. As a hitter, you know it, but it's so hard to lay off of it. More times than not, it's down out of the strike zone, and he's out of what everybody else thought. He was in a real jam.
We have to finish talking about Jim Palmer because we're talking about the home run ball.
I had a great conversation with Jim yesterday. It's good to have him in town.
No surprise. Hall of Fame pitcher for the Orioles, part of the TV crew for Baltimore. How about this, Mike? This is one of the greatest stats of all time. Palmer pitched in the major leagues for 19 seasons and never gave up a grand slam. He never gave up a grand slam in 19 seasons as a starting pitcher, now in the Hall of Fame, three Cy Youngs. He walked the bases loaded, or walked a run in with the bases loaded, I think 11 times. So he was not going to let somebody take him deep with the bags packed.
No. He'll give up one run as opposed to three. I think it's smart pitching. Or maybe four. You're talking about the grand slam. You know, a ball in the gap drives in three. He wasn't going to do that. I think for him, and especially if he knew who was up next, let me just throw some pitches off the plate. If they want to swing at it and get themselves out, okay, but I'll get the next guy out for sure. I think it's great.
It's a great stat. 19 years, he never gave up a grand slam. That's incredible. And my second favorite story with Jim Palmer is somebody once looked up, I think it was 11 guys. They looked up the 11 hitters that he walked with the bases full. And they went up to Jim and they said, "Hey, Jim, I'm going to start naming off names. All these names have something in common. I want you to tell me what they are." And the guy said, "Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher, Mike Flowers, Aaron." "Oh, those are all the guys that I walked with the bases loaded."
Not surprising. Not surprising. I mean, if you're ever fortunate enough, and we are because of the jobs that we have, to get a chance to talk to him or even listen to him, he's fantastic. And he's aware of everything.
Oh,
he does not – when it comes to his career – he is aware of all of it.
He's a walking baseballreference.com.
He is. And you know what I thought about? I had a quick conversation with him yesterday, and I walked away from it thinking it would be awfully tough if you're one of the Baltimore Orioles pitchers, and here comes Jim Palmer, and he starts asking you questions about your job and what you're trying to do and how you're doing it, because he already has all the answers.
Yeah, you just
would be intimidating, I think.
Oh, it would be terrifying.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Blow, this was fantastic. Thank you as always.
Enjoyed it.
The 1-1 pitch to the kid. Swing and a fly ball. Deep to right center field. Hall on the run. Goodbye, baseball. A grand slam home run by Ken Griffey Jr. His first grand slam in his major league career. And the Mariners now lead the New York Yankees 6-1. The kid clears the bases here in the top of the ninth inning, and the Mariners take a 5-run lead.
See you later!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.